What were the chances we'd be sharing love
before one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Can we get a roll call, Ms. Gregory?
Commissioner McLaren is absent. Commissioner Maynard?
Present.
Commissioner Ramirez?
Here.
Vice Chair Smith?
Here.
Chair Fullerton?
Here. Okay, the next item is public forum. This is the time for any member of the public to speak on any item that is not on the agenda. Do we have any members of the public wanting to speak?
Would any attendee who wishes to speak, please, or anyone on the internet, please click on the raise hand icon now on an item not in tonight's agenda. And no, Chair Fullerton.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any amendments or adjustments to the agenda?
Madam Chair, we have no amendments or adjustments.
Okay, the first item is the, I think so.
Hello?
Okay, the first item is the administrative agenda. Ms. Gregory, can you please read this into the record?
Item A1 is approval of the Planning Commission minutes of Monday, July 25th, 2022.
Okay. Do we have a motion for approval?
I'll motion to approve.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Can we get a roll call vote?
Commissioner Maynard?
Aye.
Commissioner Ramirez?
Abstain.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Chair Fullerton?
Aye.
Okay, Ms. Gregory, can you please read the next item into the record?
Item B1 is the presentation study session. It's the draft objective design standards for multiple unit and mixed use housing projects.
Do we have a presentation?
Yes. Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. Tonight's item is a study session, and it is on the draft objective design standards for multiple unit and mixed use housing projects. I'm just checking to make sure that the screen is being shared with the presentation. All right, while the clerk is double checking, I will continue with the introduction. I'm Ann Wells, Advanced Planning Manager with the city. And before getting started, I'll just introduce the full team. Peter Imhoff is the Planning and Environmental Review Director. And Andy Newkirk is a Senior Planner in Advanced Planning, and he's also the Project Manager. And then we also have Jamie Williams. She's our consultant from RRM Design Group, and she's here as part of the presentation team as well. And you'll learn in more detail tonight that the state has passed a number of housing-related laws, and one of those is driving the need for objective design standards for certain housing projects. And we're seeking your feedback on the draft that is attached to your staff report. It's also online on the project website. And again, the feedback that we're seeking is kind of follows a number of meetings with the Design Review Board over the past few months and public input. And then we'll wrap all of these revisions around in a revised draft and then bring it to you in to a public hearing in about a month. And I'll stop there, and I will turn the presentation over to Andy Newkirk, and he will lead you through most of the presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. And is the PowerPoint up?
No, we cannot see the presentation.
We're working on it, Andy.
Here it goes.
Okay. So for the time being, if you want to follow along, the PowerPoint is attached to the staff report. So I'll give you page numbers as I go. So I'm on slide 2 now. We are here for the study session. We're calling it a study session. This, we're not seeking formal action from you tonight. This is a really an informative discussion about this project. So what we'll start with is an overview, and what I suggest is after that overview, give an opportunity for Planning Commission comments. As we know, this is kind of new territory and implementation of new state law. It can be a little confusing and surprising if you haven't tracked the state law over the last few years. Then we'll give a little summary of the draft objective design standards that are provided as an attachment to the staff report and that DRB has already discussed. We'll give a summary of what we've heard from DRB to date on those draft standards. And then we have a set of slides that are asking some pretty broad questions of the Planning Commission. Again, because this is informal, we don't need definitive answers. We don't need unanimity from the Planning Commission, but we do want to hear from you so that we can maybe iron some things out before we get to a hearing with this body in the near future. And then we'll talk about next steps that Anne has hinted at. So with that, I'll jump into what Anne was alluding to in terms of state law. In particular, Senate Bill 35 in 2017 required a streamlined ministerial process for certain multiple unit and mixed use projects. There are a lot of requirements under state law to qualify under Senate Bill 35 for this streamlined approach, one of which is a certain amount of affordable housing be included in the project. It can vary depending on how much housing we're producing as a community. Right now, to qualify, a housing project has to be at least 50% affordable to lower income. So that's a pretty big number. We have not seen any Senate Bill SB 35 projects to date since 2017, but eventually we will. We need to address the requirements prior to seeing any projects move forward. Along with the streamlined ministerial process, you can't have subjective regulations. And we'll talk about subjective versus objective here in a few slides, but that cannot be part of the approval process. Us as a city, we have a lot of subjective processes or parts of processes that are subjective, including conditional use permits, development plans, but most salient to this topic is our design review process. If you look at our findings for design review approval, they're almost, if not all, subjective in nature. So we can't apply that process to projects that qualify. And we need to have these in place because we will lose that process if a project that qualifies comes in. We couldn't take it through the normal design review process, and we don't have a substitute to apply to those projects. So it's really critical that we get something in place to ensure that we have some standards that can address the site, the design, the building design, those types of things that typically get covered through the design review process. So how do objective design standards fit in with our zoning code? As you'll notice, we're proposing a new chapter for Title 17. So it's getting embedded in our zoning code, but it does not replace or augment the traditional zoning standards that we already have in Title 17. So things like heights and setback, lot coverage, open space requirements, dwelling unit density standards, parking requirements, those are not impacted by our objective design standards. Those standards are already objective, so we can apply those already. Objective design standards are additive. They're additional standards focusing really on the building and site design. Again, as I mentioned, those types of features that are typically ironed out through the design review process. So what is objective versus subjective? The state law helps us with this. They actually define what it means to be objective. And it's a standard that involves no personal judgment by an official or decision maker. And they're clear and measurable. So the idea here is that in an objective standard, anyone can apply it. You know, if you have a ruler, you can apply a setback standard, right? That's the kind of objectivity we need in our standards. There shouldn't be a debate between an applicant, planning staff, someone concerned in the neighborhood. There shouldn't be a debate about the application of an objective standard. Subjective regulations may have preferences, allowing discretion, allows flexibility, which is seen as a good thing, but we can't apply that kind of flexibility. We lose that flexibility because we can't apply the subjective standards. And as you know, kind of the converse of the clear and measurable, it may allow differing interpretations. So that's where we would run afoul of SB 35 if we had that type of standard that was up for different interpretations. So we need these standards. We need objective design standards in preparation of any projects that at least would qualify under SB 35, and we'll talk more about the applicability of this proposed chapter later. But to do this, the drafting of the objective design standards, we use DRB as the sounding board often, like Title 17, the Planning Commission is our main kind of sounding board for workshopping. We thought DRB would be the appropriate venue for discussing objective design standards, because it really is taking our subjective processes that go through DRB and trying to make them objective. So we wanted to really use DRB to flag issues of concern, flag what they want to see in objective design standards, and really use them to improve the draft. And so we met with them before even preparing a draft last fall. We met them three times to discuss the project and get kind of high level input. And then we went back and the project team at RM prepared a draft objective design standards that we released in early July, and then took to DRB at two meetings in July to get feedback. So we talked about primarily site design one day and building design the next. Those are the two main sections of this draft chapter. And we are now we're obviously in front of the Planning Commission. It's the same document that DRB looked at. We have not made any revisions yet. We'll talk about what we've heard so far from DRB, but we wanted to hear from Planning Commission as well. And then we'll go back and prepare an updated draft for hearing. So in terms of where these objective design standards could apply, again, under at least Senate Bill 35, there's a lot of criteria you need to meet to qualify, including that affordability. But theoretically, we just wanted to show theoretically where a project could go. So on this map in front of you are our residential districts that allow multiple unit dwellings, such as your RH, the high density residential, RM, medium density, and RP, planned residential. Knowing these areas, you'll know a lot of these sites are already developed. So we're not necessarily saying we're going to see objective design standard projects on all these sites. There's very few really vacant sites here. And so if a project was going to come in, you'd have to do a redevelopment. And there's even rules about loss of housing for Senate Bill 35 projects. But did want to show where theoretically these projects could go. And then also for mixed use, we have three zones where we allow multi unit dwellings as part of mixed use. So that's community commercial CC, office institutional OI, and Old Town commercial OT. And again, similar thing here is a lot of these sites are already built. So it would take redevelopment in many instances, but we did want to show just for context where these projects theoretically could go. So that's kind of the overview of kind of the impetus for the project and what our task is with this objective design standards project. And Chair Fulton, I think now might be a good time to just see if the Planning Commission has any questions at the high level here about the project and kind of the rules under which we need to operate before we dive into a summary of the draft standards.
Do we have any questions? Commissioner Maynard?
So I think I understand the process, but just to be clear, so we pass the objective design standards, and then we have an SB 85 project that comes forward that has an EIR component to it. Would that project come before the Planning Commission, or would it go directly to the land use process at this point?
So Commissioner Maynard, the way we have it drafted, it would be a land use permit. Mm-hmm. So that would not come to Planning Commission necessarily. It's not clear that there would always be an EIR. Mm-hmm. Because it would be a ministerial process, there may be an exemption. Mm-hmm. It gets a little convoluted, but it's not a guarantee that there would be an EIR even for one of these projects. But the way we have it prepared is with a land use permit.
So that's fascinating. So if it was a new construction building, it could get potentially a waiver to doing an EIR and go straight to ministerial?
Well, we would look at whether it qualified for an exemption, and then there'd be, you know, the environmental checklist to determine whether there, you know, if it wasn't exempt, what the appropriate process would be. There's also infill exemptions that a project may qualify for. There are, you know, but I mean, every project's unique, so it's tough to say with certainty, like, what exactly the CEQA process, if there was one, what that would look like.
Okay. So, it might be exempt, but it wouldn't necessarily be exempt as this SB 85 project. It wouldn't always be exempt from EIR.
Yeah, I think you'd still, there's not a rule, as far as I understand it, there's not a rule in SB 35 saying that these projects are exempt. There is not a specific exemption in CEQA for these projects. However, there is an exemption for, like, ministerial projects. I'd have to look at the exact language, but there's exceptions to the exemption, so it gets a little convoluted.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we have any other questions before we move on? Okay. I think we can move on to next.
All right.
Section.
So at this point, I'll kick it off to Jamie Williams with RM, and I'll just note that one of the benefits of having RM is their architects, their planners, and their landscape architects. So we kind of get a lot with RM, as you'll see as we go through these standards. It's a lot of architectural elements and landscape architectural consideration. So with that, I'll kick it over to Jamie Williams to kind of summarize what we've prepared in that draft that's attached to your staff report.
Thank you, Andy, and thanks, everybody. Look forward to sharing this draft and giving your feedback tonight. I want to start out with just a general overview of how it's organized. As Andy mentioned, this is going to be a supplemental section of your existing municipal code. It'll be inserted directly into it, and it's focusing just on design for these qualifying projects. So the Objective Design Standards document is divided up into five sections. It talks about an introduction and the applicability, as well as site design and building design, those are the two largest portions of the document, along with some mixed use standards. Mixed use standards would apply only to mixed use projects, but those are supplemental to the site design and building design criteria that the project would also be held accountable to. And then we address utilitarian elements, but it's important to note that this is not a repeat of existing materials. So there's a lot of cross-referencings, particularly in the utilitarian elements section, because it's covered throughout parts of your municipal code in other areas. Another key component is that we took a look at existing city policy, and this is really a technical exercise in translating the goals, objectives, and policies that exist today into objective language. And there's always that balancing act, this is fine, Andy. There's always that balancing act of providing enough detail so that you are really elevating the quality of design, that you're ensuring that it is appropriate, context sensitive and appropriate to the city of Goleta, and also that you're not putting too much regulation in there so that you start to end up with cookie cutter design and everything all looks the same. So it's a bit of a dance. I think Andy did a good job of explaining how these will be applied. It's through this specific qualifying project types, multifamily, multiple dwelling, and mixed use project types. However, at some point or now, the city could decide to apply them in other project types related to the number of affordable units or project size. So there's just some other categories that ultimately they could be applied to, but at this point it's written so that it's just for these particular projects. And then, as he stated, it doesn't replace any of the building envelope standards. So what happens and how that building is placed on the site, how large it is, where it is, and the setbacks, all of that is already infused into your municipal code, and these are really just to focus on design. and he touched a bit on the permitting process. The intent is really to remove the discretionary review process, and that is, again, coming from the state. So without these objective design standards, in practicality, one of these projects could go through and be approved without having any design criteria to adhere to. So this is really a protective way of making sure that new development looks and feels like it belongs in the community. So the first section we dig into is site design. The topics contained within this section deal with the placement of the building, the parking location, ensuring adequate and quality pedestrian circulation throughout the site. We talk a lot about open space, common open space, and private open space, as well as landscaping. We also refer to, there's a new term that you'll see that's a primary street. And what that's really talking about is, how is the building oriented? Where is the building placed? We want it located adjacent to the street to create that building form and pedestrian environment that exists today. We want to make sure that there's entrances and facades are articulated to face that primary street. And we want to talk about where the primary vehicle entrances and parking locations are located. So that's commonly referred to in that primary street definition. When we dig into building design and building form, there's a lot that goes into that. We kind of refer to that as the icing on the cake. It talks about variation in wall planes and heights, and making sure that the massing and the roof planes all have different forms so that you don't just get a big boxy block development. We talk about where buildings entrances should be located and how many of them and how they're oriented, as well as getting into materials, windows and doors, what they look like, how to ensure that they are complementary around all sides of the building, and also touch on parking structures with those same building design criteria. As I said, the mixed use is to really ensure that there's that pedestrian-oriented ground floor. So all of the things that we talked about on the previous slide with building design apply, but we wanna make sure that there is a minimum ground floor height. And initially we had put 15 feet in. We already know that we're actually gonna recommend a modification of that to 12 feet. But that's just to make sure that you have a nice commercial storefront and area, but that you can provide 2 to 3 stories above within your existing height limit without exceeding it. We want to make sure that there's 50% transparency or window or glazing on the ground floor, so you can see in and have that commercial feeling, as well as paving treatments and entrances that are at the street edge. And then finally, the utilitarian section really digs into a lot of cross-referencing, a small amount of sort of augmented standards, but essentially it's really providing a little bit more clarity for topics related to bike parking, trash and recycling, fences and walls, lighting and mechanical equipment screening, and we added a section on vents and exhaust. Picture on the right is what we don't want. And then we had, as Andy said, we met with your DRB 5 times. The last 2 times were really to collect their input. And the next couple of slides summarizes what their recommendations were. But if you refer to your staff report, Andy did a great job of helping to define what our responses are. And I'll try to walk through some of those today. There was a general comment to add graphics and illustrate the standards. That was actually in the works already, and you'll be seeing those in your next draft, which I think we'll be back to see you in a couple weeks. There were also a request to cross-reference a few additional standards And we're picking up those modifications and changes as we move through the revised draft. There was a request to consider ways to address bike circulation in addition to pedestrians and vehicles. And we will be modifying the existing standards as appropriate to accommodate that request. As far as bicycle parking, that was a request, but it's, I believe, already addressed in your existing municipal code. So I don't think there's going to be too much need to do anything more except for provide a cross-reference. Garages and carports was a good catch on their behalf, and we'll be adding some standards to address the design of carports and garages. Wall variation, there was a concern that the 50-foot length was too long, and we have taken a deeper dive into where it might be appropriate to limit that. I think we're going to recommend 30 feet, so stay tuned for that. Materials is another area that they thought we should strengthen by clarifying appropriate and prohibited materials. And so we'll be providing a revised version of recommended materials, as well as prohibiting color change at outside corners. We have a standard in there that talks about materials changing at inside corners, and we'll be adding colors to that piece. There was a comment about design elements to ensure safety, and we actually will be looking, we have already started to look at how that can impact some of the other standards and improve that, address that comment. Landscaping was a surprising amount of chat about landscaping, but has resulted, I think, in some clarifications of minimum requirements of ground cover and some other additions. There was an ask to provide private storage space requirement. And that's an interesting one that we would actually like some additional feedback on, I believe. In the zoning code update, this was something that I believe was originally in a previous draft. And then I believe the decision makers decided to take that out. So we're not sure where you guys currently stand on that one, and maybe Andy can chime in later if there's more clarification needed. And then there was a question about solar photovoltaics and considering requirements. And it's important to note that that's actually handled in the state energy efficiency standards that are Title 15. And so it's not our recommendation to address that comment as part of this document. I think that covers everything, and Andy, I'll turn it back over to you.
Sure. Thanks, Jamie. So what we have in the next few slides is just some kind of prompting questions for you, although you know, we're certainly happy to take this in any direction. This is a fairly informal meeting, and where we're really trying to identify any issues that we should be addressing before we take this forward for public hearings. So we have questions that are trying to stimulate some discussion. But again, we're happy to hear whatever the planning commissioners would like to provide to us. We're also happy to answer any questions. And we really would appreciate questions and comments tonight as best you can. That will help us prepare. We can either answer things now or be ready to give you responses as part of that hearing process. But we wanted to get this project and this document in front of you before we get the hearings, so it isn't the first time that you're being introduced to it when we're asking you for a recommendation to City Council. So with that, I'll just jump in. On the introduction, we did want to ask if there are any thoughts regarding broadening the applicability of this chapter, 1744. As we mentioned, we have it applying only really to projects qualifying under state law, so really focusing on those SB 35 projects. But we could broaden its applicability to help stimulate housing projects. As I mentioned, we haven't seen any SB 35 projects because there are a lot of criteria that need to be met. And we also haven't seen that many housing projects recently. But we could apply it more broadly. We could apply it just when there's a certain amount of affordable housing. We could apply it to kind of smaller projects, but not really big ones. But we wanted to hear if Planning Commission had any thoughts on that. or whether they would like to see kind of the applicability moving forward as it's drafted currently.
Commissioner Ramirez?
Yeah, I just had one regarding the, how is a small project defined? What's the criteria for it to be defined as small project?
It's not, Commissioner Ramirez, it's not defined. That would be, if we wanted to add something, we would have to like articulate a number of units.
Okay.
Or square footage or something. But it's just more of an idea at this point, that if you're inclined to add something, we would need to figure out exactly what we wanted as a threshold.
Okay, thank you. No further questions at this time.
Thank you. Sure. Vice Chair Smith?
Yes, I had a question. I didn't know, has the city received any feedback like from the Housing Authority or any of the other nonprofit housing providers on the question of the objective design standards?
We have not heard from them on this project.
Okay. Yeah, it was just, well, obviously there's already a pending project, but it seems, I know that they're busy, but it seems like their input, even just conceptually, would be informative. The other question I had was, I noticed in the language of the applicability section, that there's both a reference to the specific code, but then the language right now says, as well as any other project that qualifies for objective ministerial review. So is that written sort of with anticipation that there might be more of this coming at the state level?
Vice Chair Smith, I don't know if anticipation is quite the right word, but in case,
uh-huh.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's anything pending that would fall under this,
right,
like under, you know, 2022 bills. But it saves us a tiny revision later if there's mm-hmm. another part of government code that's added.
Right. Okay. My sense is from all of the time and work that went into the zoning code and thinking about our process more broadly, and thinking about what the council may think, my sense is that I don't think this community would want a broad applicability. I think the affordable question is an interesting one, which is a little bit already addressed within the current law in terms of which projects may be subject. At least right now, the projects have to have a certain amount of affordability. But I don't know if before the next round, if any of those nonprofit providers, I'm assuming that they would be supportive, but I don't know. Just some comments and thoughts. Thank you.
Commissioner Maynard?
One more follow-up question first. I'm still playing with this idea of sort of when do we slide from subjective to objective, and what are the things we make decisions about as Planning Commission? And so one of my thoughts is, so once we move to the sort of land use permit, another area that we tend to spend a lot of time debating about is thinking about some of the zoning guidance also has language like if feasible. It shows up a lot in our zoning ordinance in different places. We've strengthened a lot of the language around the streamside protection guidance as an example, but there's still some wiggle there in terms of really looking at the space and the site. Would, if there was a request to make an exception to those minimum requirements, would it stay ministerial? Would it stay a land use permit? Or if somebody could make a really good argument that it wasn't feasible and they needed to be 90 feet from a stream, would it stay a land use permit, or would this SB 85 project come back to us?
Chair Maynard, you ask a good question there. So that, like, for the SBA, the 100-foot standard is objective. It's the reduction that becomes subjective.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's an argument that can be made that we could apply the 100-foot standard, and that would be our objective standard for SBA buffer reductions. And we would apply that, and if you didn't meet that, then you would move out of this streamlined process. Probably on a project that comes in, we would want to confirm with the city attorney's office on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to note that if you don't meet the objective design standards, it doesn't mean you can't do your project, or if you don't meet objective standards, it doesn't mean you can't do your project. It just means you have to go through the normal process.
Okay.
So when you get into those, if you're not going to meet, you know, same with just a standard setback from the right of way, if you're not going to meet those and you need, you know, a modification or an adjustment to that standard, you can do it. You just don't go through this process anymore.
That's very helpful. Thank you. I similarly think that we should not broaden the applicability of the ODS at this time. I like the concept of focusing on affordable housing, but I actually think the current guidance with SB 85 does that by saying that it would apply to this if it's a 50% affordable housing project, and if we don't build our housing, that percentage goes down. So I think that structure is already built in there. There's a temptation to add an additional incentive for projects that are maybe even lower, but maybe if we keep it at the 50%, we'll convince projects to actually build 50% affordable housing. So I think that's sort of where my mind is at. Maybe the best way to support affordable housing is keep the standard high at 50%. So at this point, I would not recommend broadening the applicability. I think given what we're talking about here, the land use permit does make sense. I also really appreciated in the staff report the discussion that in a land use permit, it's appealable where the zoning clearance is not appealable. And so I liked that was the direction that you went there. I thought it was a smart choice. That's all my comments.
I have a question. Talking about small projects, years ago before I was on the Planning Commission, when I was on DRB, they started talking about objective standards for ADUs. Mm-hmm. Are those in place currently? They are already.
Commissioner Folger, we do have, so the ADU section in our code is kind of this standalone, kind of unique section. There are a small set of objective design standards. It's pretty small, but it really speaks to like same materials as the house, the main house. And then if you want to deviate from that, then you actually have to go through design review. There's some regulations about the slope of the roof and some landscaping requirements. So chapter 1744 would not apply to ADUs. This is, there's kind of three different buckets of streamlined processes. There's the ADUs, there's SB 9 projects, which we talked about at the beginning of the year. And then there's this set, which would apply to like apartment buildings or like condo projects, that type of thing.
Yeah, I guess that's my comment is that broadening it, it seems like every category of a project might have different standards. So I don't know if these standards, you know, just as these standards are real excessive for like a ADU or a house. Like I think by just saying these should apply to residential doesn't make a lot of sense. I think each type of project would want to go back and look at what the standard should be for that project. So I think for now, opinion would be that we would just keep it for this type of project.
I was just gonna note that I actually found that language, that last sentence on the applicability sentence, like I thought it was a little vague because it just says any other project. I get that it's within this chapter that's titled multi-unit and mixed use design standards, but I don't know if there's some way to, I understand that the idea is to keep that language open if there's additional state laws that change, but at the same time.
Vice Chair Smith, we can look about at least making it clear that this, at the very least, isn't related to SB 9 or ADU projects.
Yeah.
We can put in a clarification.
Maybe just a reference or a footnote or something.
Yeah, or make it clear that we're talking about other projects that qualify, multiple and mixed use projects. Yeah. It's fine. I mean, because the title itself isn't determinative there, so we can clarify that.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any other comments on this section?
And Chair Fulton, are there any other comments on at least the land use permit versus zoning clearance? And I did want to note that we have in there, not to confuse things, but we have in there the requirement for a coastal development permit in the coastal zone. Did want to make clear that currently under SB 35, it doesn't apply in the coastal zone, but we put that in there in case the rules change or we broaden the applicability, then we have that already ready to go and we don't have to make further changes in the chapter.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yes, I just had a question. Does the fact on this question of the permit question, is it the city's understanding that the concept of like ministerial review, like that a land use permit would still qualify, if it were appealable, that it's still considered in terms of our need for compliance with the state law, that would be allowed as considered that level of approval?
Yeah, and we can confirm with legal, just double, triple check. But yeah, and essentially, when you challenge that land use permit, you couldn't challenge it based on a lack of neighborhood compatibility or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to really the challenge would have to be to the city's application of one of the objective standards. You'd have to really spell out what it is. You're basically saying we did it wrong. Not that you disagree or
right. You
think our judgment was flawed. It's that we misapplied an objective standard. You'd have to challenge based on that.
Uh-huh. Okay. That makes sense. Thank you.
I think we can move to the next section.
All right, so this gets more, now we're out of the kind of the technical procedural stuff and into the actual design standards. So we'll just ask all three of these questions and then kind of open it up. So is there anything that, Planning Commission in reviewing the site design standards that needed clarifying? Was there anything that we missed? Or is there anything that you think is too restrictive? So essentially kind of, did we kind of find the right balance in the site design section? And you're also welcome to ask any questions.
So just one quick question. Was the site design where the landscaping and materials were, or is that the next section?
So the landscaping materials, the materials for the building are in section 030.
Okay, thanks. Vice Chair Smith?
This is, I guess, a more global question, which is the challenge of this whole process. But I know occasionally there's design elements or areas that are a question mark, or, maybe we haven't anticipated or defined in our code. I seem to recall with some of the projects we've had some debates about, the definition of, like, common open space. And I know in terms of our current zoning code that, we certainly have attempted to be very, very clear about what that means or doesn't mean. But as, technology changes there's always things that we may not have thought of. So I guess I'm just thinking about those things that happen of, I guess that would make it more subjective. I mean, if there was some debate about, what would qualify as either private space or open space. I mean, does that then, would that sort of remove it from the objective bundle into a more a need for a subjective opinion? Or is that something sort of, staff, is there working with the applicant on the application would sort of work through?
Vice Chair Smith, I think we want to be really objective. The idea here is everything should be applied. Mm-hmm. Everyone should understand how everything gets applied. So where we have definitions that we think are clear in the code, we would still apply those. The definitions at the end of Title 17, so like Chapter 1773, those apply. And you'll see at the end of the document, starting on page 9 of the draft standards, we've added definitions that we think are needed. There'll probably be a couple more added at least, based on some of the DRB comments. We didn't flag those for discussion, but I think colonnade was one. But the idea is that everyone should understand what they mean. If there's disagreement, then we can't apply it essentially, because it's failing to be objective at that point. So it's really critical that we're really, really clear. And we've had one set of legal review already, where they kind of flagged what they thought were a couple little things that needed additional detail to kind of kick it out of kind of subjective land. But that's the challenge. And kind of big picture, we're not going to be able to outthink everything on these draft standards. You know, we try to be detailed, rely on, you know, our consultant team who's kind of worked through these in the past and kind of understand kind of what needs to be flagged. I will note that, you know, we may not have a long project with the consultant in the future, but these standards don't have to be static. So we have the ability to learn as we go if we see projects, and if something doesn't work or we're missing something, we can add it, although that will only apply to then future projects. But that's one of the challenges of this, you know, this exercise, is to try to get good standards in place so we can kind of avoid the projects we don't want to see or the design we don't want to see. But it's going to be impossible for us to kind of cover everything without having process projects.
Commissioner Ramirez?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Andy, if you can kind of expand on the common open space within the site design, just want to kind of talk through you know, what is, you know, meant by some of the criteria for projects with common open space.
So common open space is already a defined term, and we already have a square footage requirement in probably part 2 of Title 17. So it's open space, it's a, you know, number 100 square feet or something per unit, and it's communal open space. So it's defined in at the end of Title 17. And so what really the common open space, because we already have some of those requirements in our code, again, these are going to be additive. So we just added a little more detail to what we want to see with some of that common open space in terms of the kind of spreading it out so that there's not just kind of one big open space in one area. Although, you know, 1 to 25 unit projects, you only need one. You know, so and we're not saying you have to have dozens of these open spaces, but it was a comment we heard from DRB to provide open spaces kind of intermixed throughout the development. And so that's what that one kind of additional common open space standard looks at. And in practice, what do these spaces look like? They could be a field. We've seen bocce pits and like barbecue areas. They don't have to be like sports fields or, you know, something like that, but it's kind of communal space within the development designed for the residents of the site, not for the public at large.
Thank you for that. And one additional question, and I wasn't sure if it was this section of it, is where it addresses the personal storage space that you mentioned earlier, or is that a different section?
Commissioner Ramirez, so it's not in the draft right now. It'd probably go in site design, but we don't have it in here yet. So we can touch on that now, or we can touch on that based on the DRB feedback, whichever the commissioners would like to do.
I'm comfortable with addressing it now, or at least talking about it now, only because if you think that it would be in site design, then might as well kind of just expand on it if you could.
Sure. So we got this comment from DRB, and several DRB members agreed that there is an interest in requiring kind of personal storage space outside of the individual dwelling units. So this, could be like kind of almost locker type things, or, you know, storage kind of at the back of carports, that kind of thing. Places where you could store like stuff for your automobiles, like oil and those kind of things that you might not want in your apartment, your ski equipment, your camping gear, you know, your water sports gear, that kind of thing. We had it in an early version of Title 17, and we removed it just because it seemed kind of really more of an amenity than kind of a something we thought made sense to absolutely require. However, you know, we're happy to talk about this and get more input from Planning Commission, but it was certainly DRB's interest to require something. So if we were to add something, we'd want to have a size requirement, you know, how many cubic feet. And keep in mind, you know, sites may be constrained, so we want to caution against having, you know, a really large requirement here. But thinking about the size, if you want to have a size requirement, how big you think would be appropriate to mandate. And then also, if there's any thoughts about where we would require them to be located on the site, would we require them in the main building? That, you know, may increase the envelope. Do we just want it within a certain proximity to each individual unit, et cetera? So we have some kind of questions about, you know, if we are going to draft the standard, what might the Planning Commission want to see in that standard?
Okay, thank you for that. Nothing more, Chair.
Okay, Commissioner Maynard?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. On the private storage space, I lean towards what you had already described, that this is a good amenity and something that a builder may want to provide to their folks, but I don't think it should be required. We have a lot of requirements already regarding the space, and I'm not sure if I think this should be a minimum requirement of having the private storage space. So I would vote against adding that. In terms of open space, thinking back to some of our past discussions on this, trying to remember the exact final place that we ended on the new zoning ordinance, but I think explicitly saying rooftops don't count as open space, I think that would require more of a discretionary review process. So for an objective process, I wouldn't count a rooftop area as open space. Similarly, and I think our existing guidelines do prohibit an inside a building from being counted as open space. At one point, we had a proposal for I think it was an indoor pool or an indoor billiards hall or something like this. And there was debate about whether that would count as open space. I'd say that it has to be outdoors and it can't be on a rooftop. And if they want to do it, the rooftop as their open space, they should go through the the subjective process as opposed to the streamlined process. On the landscaping, I know we have good guidance in the zoning ordinance around drought-tolerant landscaping. And there is some references to the other components of the landscaping here. Would some component of drought-tolerant landscaping still be required here, or would we need to add that if we wanted to make sure that that was a part of the plans?
Commissioner Maynard, we will be kind of beefing up the landscaping cross-references. So there is a reference to the landscaping chapter. It's kind of in the intro to the landscaping portion, but we're kind of looking at adding some subsections and specifically calling out water-efficient landscaping requirements and drought-tolerant requirements that are in the landscaping section, just to make it super clear.
That's wonderful. Okay, you're already a step ahead of me on that one. I guess this is a very minor thing, and it may be already covered, but just sort of wording-wise, in little page 3, big page 13, C1, which is like pedestrian circulation and access general. There's sort of pedestrian walkways internally should connect this way. Pedestrian walkways should also connect to the public, and pedestrian walkways should also connect to building entrances, and almost kind of wanted to say A should also connect to B should connect to C, which I may just be like a slight wording question. So I debated whether to say it or not. But I think just making sure all three of those pedestrian walkway systems also connect to each other was a thought that I had there. And that's all for this section for me.
I have one quick question in, there was something referring to grasscrete. Mm-hmm. What is grasscrete? It says it's prohibited. Well,
I'll defer to Jamie on that one.
Grasscrete is where you see the little blocks of paving with the grass that comes in between it. You see, it's also called like, so it's a combination. I'm trying to look and see what, the reason shall provide a decorative and accent paving, contrast color and texture. Grasscrete is prohibited. Yeah, it's where there's, where you're promoting sort of a lawn or grass in between individual pavers. And I think the idea is that you want it to be a smooth textured surface.
Okay, thank you. And then for the landscaping, I know you said there's gonna be some additional text, but was there any discussion of like an authorized plant list? Like, I think they did that for the ADUs where they have a, like a list of authorized plants to pick from, and they just could check off, you know, whatever they want to use. Is that under discussion as well?
Chair Fulton, we have not discussed that level of detail at this point. I'm not sure the complexity of preparing that. Maybe a pretty heavy lift, but we can talk about it with the project team.
Okay, thanks. Because that also goes along with Commissioner Maynard's comments about drought tolerant plants and making sure that, you know, drought tolerant plants are being used. And just one more comment about the storage lockers. I agree. I think that they are an amenity. I don't think that they should be required. I mean, if they're not required for like every other kind of project that we have, it seems like to insist that they're required just for this type of project, it's not really consistent. So I think it's maybe like a nice to have, but not a requirement. That's all my comments. Any other comments? Nope. Okay. We can move to the next section.
All right. So we have kind of similar questions here. Just, is there any clarifications that are needed? Topics we missed in the building design? And then any standards that commissioners feel are too restrictive when it comes to the actual building design itself.
I have a question. For, in terms of color, is there any discussion on, you know, is it like any color could be approved? If they want to paint it neon green, is that acceptable? I'm just like, it talks about not changing the color in the corner. There's a lot of little details about color, but not overall color. Was there any discussion on that?
Commissioner Fullerton, Jamie might have more to add on this. We've talked about this. There isn't a restriction. It's hard to articulate an objective standard when it comes to color. So, you know, if there's suggestions on what you don't want to see, we'd be happy to hear those, but how we would roll those into objective standards is a bit of a challenge. But we'd be happy to hear about like concerns, maybe not neon green, if there's a way we can provide an objective standard against that. But if, you know, we've had projects in Goleta that are fairly kind of light colors. We also see a lot of brown tones or kind of earth tones, but exactly what is an earth tone is even subjective. So just saying earth tones wouldn't get the job done probably. But we're happy to hear if there's thoughts about color, but with the caveat that it may be a challenge to craft the objective standard to meet that.
Okay, thanks. Commissioner Maynard?
I like the suggestion of trying to do something on color, and I don't think I'm smart enough to figure out how to recommend that. I will say my HOA does require earth tones, so that's something I've seen used in other places before. But I'd have to think more about how to craft it. But I like the concept of trying to put some edges on that. My only general comment on this one, and I think this might put me at odds with the DRB on certain things, but I'd really like to see more solar possible on buildings. And I think one of the challenges that I have sometimes seen come up in design is we're trying to break up the building so that it's not just one big block. But in doing so, we're also breaking up the roof in ways that make it really hard to put solar on roofs. And so that's maybe just a more general comment that I wanted to put out there. And again, I think I need Jamie and Andy and DRB's great thinking on this to figure out how to craft this the right way. But I just want to put a call out for a balance between trying to break up the roof aesthetically to move away from blocking, but in a way that doesn't make it really hard to put solar because you've broken up the roof in too many places. And so that's just a balance that I think we need to hit somewhere in here. That's my only comment.
Do we have any other comments? No other comments.
All right, so we're on to the mixed-use and utilitarian standards. We've blended these together because they're both pretty short. So again, similar questions, anything need clarification or things you'd like to see that aren't included, or if you think anything is too restrictive on these two sections. And again, I would note that Jamie had mentioned this, but that 15-foot first floor for mixed use, we're going to propose to bring that down to 12. And that's just out of concern where you have, 25-foot height standard in some districts and 35 in others. If you have a 15-foot first floor, if you have a 25-foot height standard, it may be a challenge to even get a second story. And so we don't want to prevent two stories in 25-foot districts and three stories in 35-foot districts.
I had a question. I guess I'm thinking do we have a definition for mixed use? It's an interesting question.
Vice Chair Smith, mixed use is defined in chapter 1773.
Okay, good.
So it's essentially a single design that includes residential, non-residential, that's essentially planned as a cohesive overall site.
Right, okay.
and I should note in a few places, in COT at least, I know we require commercial on the first floor. So residential can't be on the first floor, but other places it may be. It's not explicitly prohibited, although the transparency requirement may mute the desire to have residential on that first floor.
Oh, that was it, thank you.
Commissioner Maynard?
Notes. I'm actually glad you changed it from 15 feet to 12 feet for the ground floor height, because I was going to suggest that one might be. Oh. Sorry, I wasn't on the mic. I'm glad you switched it from 15 feet to 12 feet on the ground floor height, because I was just thinking that might be a little bit too much as a minimum. So I like that you're considering changing that. My only other comment on the trash recycling and green waste container enclosures, I like everything you have here. And I don't know if we also want to add any caveat, like if laws change, that additional trash enclosures are required, that this would follow with that to create space for any required additional containers. Just to give us a little bit of leeway. It feels like trash and recycling and composting rules have changed drastically in the last 5 years, and what's required has changed quite a bit. So maybe giving us a little bit of leeway to connect with whatever existing law is on what's provided is just a thought.
Commissioner Ramirez?
Yeah, I just had one, and I wasn't sure if it was in this section or one that we just finished, but it was the, I think there was something about the prohibition of glass curtain walls. And I just wanted to kind of hear more about that and really what that was trying to address or where that might fall within these different sections.
Sure, I can start that. And Jamie might want to do a little more explaining about what it really looks like. This is a comment, so it's not in the draft right now, but it was a comment from DRB in terms of listing out prohibited materials. And it's really an aesthetic desire, where you just kind of have a wall of glass along the facade. And we heard from a DRB member that was not desired for these projects. So if you feel differently, that's fine. But we did mention it as something we heard from DRB.
And so I just need to make sure I understand. So it would be a wall of glass. Is that in essence what it would? Okay. I see some head nodding. Okay. Nothing else, Chair.
I have one comment or question on the street-facing setbacks, saying that you have to have at least 2 amenities per 50 linear feet, such as benches, drinking fountains, shade structure, or other design element. I'm sure that DRB had a lot of discussion on this, but it seems like a lot to have to kind of forced to say, like, oh, every 25 feet I have to have a planter or a bench or a water fountain. I don't know, to me it seems like a lot on a facade for a building, but that's just my personal comment.
I'll add here full time, we did not hear from DRB. I don't believe we got any comments on that, but we can kind of look at that standard again. It's really the design. The idea is to really integrate it with the kind of pedestrian ways in front, to really integrate that mixed use in with the streetscape. But we're happy to look at that further.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Maynard?
I would note on the on that component of those additional amenities, it does have some small things that could address that, such as planters. And so I thought with some of the smaller ones, I was comfortable with it written as is, because it gives you a lot of different options to get there inexpensively. So I thought that was helpful. I actually also thought the glass curtain one was a little odd. I will defer to DRB on this one, but I was surprised that was a restriction.
If any other comments? No?
All right. So going on to DRB input, we do have the private storage question listed here. So we'd be happy to hear if there's any further thoughts. I think we've heard from at least 2 of the commissioners on this, but if there's other thoughts, we'd be happy to hear those. And if there's any other kind of thoughts or concerns or support for DRB's input, as we kind of mentioned the staff report, our operating assumption is to move forward with many of those amendments, those edits, based on their feedback, but we're happy to hear what the commission has thoughts about any of those.
Vice Chair Smith?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm inclined to just stick with the process that we went through with hours and hours on the zoning code. I suspect what DRB may be getting at here, though, is if we have a discretionary, multi-unit project, I think there's been times where the developer, they may make a choice as a landlord, property management company, to make sure that individuals, let's say if garages are provided, that individuals are using that to store cars, and they may choose to prohibit storage use for garages and things like that. So I don't know. So I don't know, if it's truly a ministerial project. I mean, I don't know if that's some of the concern of just, right, if places that have been designed for vehicles are then being used for personal storage and then vehicles are out on the street. I'm not quite sure if that's sort of where the concern is coming from. But again, right, it makes, if you're adding this other amenity as a requirement, it's making it more expensive. It seems like a lot of projects have some of these types of amenities. I don't know. I'm inclined to sort of stick with our long, we had so much comment and feedback in our zoning code. But I guess I would just say, of course, but our zoning code contemplates at various times that we have a discretionary look at a lot of, larger projects. So it's like this is a different way to maybe think about it. But that said, just acknowledging that, I'm still inclined to stick with the status quo.
Commissioner Maynard.
One last thought on the personal storage. I think there's a lot of ways to address storage. And I think that's part of why I don't recommend adding a personal storage requirement. You can do it by making the apartment larger, by adding storage in the apartment. You can do it in the garages. You can do it separately. I think there's a lot of different solutions to it. And I'd rather give the builder the choice how to solve the storage question rather than us getting very prescriptive about that particular amenity. Other than that, I think the staff in writing this report hit a great balance with reference to the zoning code. I was nervous going into this about what we might lose as we move into this ministerial process, and I thought there was some really great references and use of the zoning ordinance throughout the document. And a good balance of like, where do we need to add a little bit more because there's too much that's subjective in portions of the zoning code. And I think this is a really hard task that the staff did a stellar job at. So congratulations to everybody who worked on this. And that's all my comments.
No other comments? Okay. I don't think we have anything else.
All right, so Chair Fulton, just a couple more slides here. First off, thanks for all the input tonight. I think we're on track. I think we got some good feedback tonight and some things we can look at. But by and large, I think we're kind of moving in a positive direction towards hearings, which will come up quite shortly. We are on track to move forward with hearings in the early fall in the next few weeks. We've already been working on revisions to based on DRB and legal input, and working on those graphics to be embedded in the code. So that's coming soon. So you'll be back hearing from us. We'll probably spend less time on some of the background information and just summarize a lot of the revisions to what you've seen tonight. But it should look fairly similar. You should not see too many surprises based on kind of what you've seen in the draft and what we've summarized from DRB input and what we've heard tonight. So hopefully that will help in your deliberations when we get to that hearing. Just wanted to note that we do have anyone in the public who's listening, you can contact me. My contact information is on the slide in front of you. Give me a call, give me an email. Happy to discuss this project with anyone who's interested. And we also have a project website that has all of our DRB meeting materials. Because we've been five times, there's a lot of materials, staff reports, attachments, reference material for folks if they're interested in this project. And with that concludes our presentation and the input we're seeking from you tonight. So unless there's anything further, we're really appreciative of the time you've taken and the input you've given to us. So thank you.
Great, thank you, Mr. Newkirk and Ms. Williams. The next item on the agenda is the director's report.
Thank you very much, Chair Fullerton, and good evening, Commission. I just have a brief report tonight. I want to alert you to a few things. First off, next week will be our city manager, Michelle Green's last full week with the city. Our new city manager, Robert Nesbitt, will be starting the following week on September 1st. On September 5th, we have a holiday, Labor Day, and offices will be closed. And then on September 14th, I wanted to alert the commission, we have a special city council meeting scheduled where Santa Barbara Airport staff will be presenting to the council concerning the Santa Barbara Airport master plan update and the terminal expansion project. And that will be an opportunity for the public and the council to ask questions and to be informed about those projects. Our next meeting will be September 12th, and we expect that the overall, the objective design standards will be returning to the commission for action at that time. That is all I have.
Okay, thank you, Director Imhoff. Next up is Planning Commission comments. Do we have any comments from the commissioners?
Commissioner Maynard.
Just a question. Do we know when Heritage Ridge might come back?
We don't have a specific date yet. We are working closely with the applicant team and with our city attorney's office to get that ready, but there are still a few things that need to be prepared before that will be ready to come back to you.
Vice Chair Smith?
Oh, I just wanted to commend the city. I attended the dam dinner this last weekend, and it was a great event. And I haven't gone every year, but at least from the last few years, I think it was the biggest, the most well-attended that I've seen. And I just thought it went really well, and it seemed like everybody had a good time. So I just wanted to thank the city's staff for that lovely event.
Great, thank you. Okay, so I guess meeting adjourned. Thanks, everyone.
Move for adjournment.
Oh, sorry.
Motion?
Move
for adjournment.
We have a second?
Okay, we'll second.
Okay, can we get a roll call vote?
Commissioner Maynard?
Aye.
Commissioner Ramirez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Chair Fullerton?
Aye. Okay, meeting adjourned. Thank you, everyone.